Roll up, ladies and gentlemen, to the greatest podcast on Earth! Step right up and experience the magnificence that is the Two Ring Circus Podcast! You'll gasp, you'll laugh, and you'll be amazed at what comes next.
Amazing.
Don't worry about the smell. It's just the stars of our show, Tom Italiano.
Oh.
And Matt Bradshaw.
G'day.
Welcome.
Sorry, we were talking about Earth. We haven't talked about Earth at all.
Don't need to, it's flat, man. Doesn't matter.
No, I mean, like Earth, like as in soil and dirt. It's the greatest podcast on Earth.
We did, we talked about it last episode. I was drawing sums for my cat.
Oh, in the dirt.
Digging in the Dirt's a good song.
Who's that?
Peter Gabriel.
Not too familiar.
You're fairly familiar. You're a little bit too familiar for me sometimes.
Welcome everyone to episode 39, I think.
What? 39? How did that happen?
39 weeks.
How's that? 2 weeks in a row, here we are at the Duda Gala, upstairs.
Same clothes.
In the gala room.
Do you like cloves? Not of garlic, of cloves. Do you like the smell?
Yeah.
Yeah, good, aren't they?
Yeah.
When I was a kid in the UK, we would make Christmas decorations. And we
oranges?
Yes! Oh, what a wonderful smell.
Oranges stuffed with cloves.
Amazing.
When I say stuffed.
I mean, well.
Oranges with cloves stuck in them.
Because, yeah.
Stuck. Oranges stuck with cloves.
Great smell.
Yeah. Also, cloves. Pretty funny way to say the word cloves.
And smell. Not great smell. These would be better if they were stuck with
grapes.
Cloves.
We're not talking about grape smell.
Oh,
we're talking about clove smell.
Apologies. Get my
fruit. No, you're talking about puffages. Bees.
No, those little Dutch cakes.
Uh-huh.
Puffages? What are they called?
They're not Dutch, are they?
I think so.
Aren't they Swedish?
Well, I guess.
Puffages?
Yeah, aren't they Dutch?
They start with P and end with J-E-S.
Yeah.
If Anna ever watched our podcast, she'd be able to tell us.
She would.
I mean, she's Finnish, but she's European enough to know the difference.
And very clever.
She is clever.
Yeah, and a bit of a culinary aficionado. She's a bit of a foodie, I reckon.
Oh, is that what you meant?
Yeah.
Thanks for dumbing it down for me. is she?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay. She's an appreciator of things that I don't really understand, so when it comes to food.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So we both appreciate Maltesers. See, if the dematerializer was available to us now, we'd be able to get to hang out with Anna much more often. I sound like the one who's had beer.
You really do. What happened there? That was bizarre.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have trouble in life.
Dude, we've all got trouble in life. Mm. It's part of the human condition.
Uh-oh.
What? No, that wasn't the segue into our subject for the day.
Oh, what's our subject for the day?
Oscar Jordan Peterson. B. Peterson, the piano player.
Great composer.
Slash philosopher.
Slash? What else does he do? What is he? Should
He's
we read?
He's a clinical psychologist and university lecturer.
Jordan B. Peterson is a professor of psychology at the University of Toronto. He's taught mythology to lawyers, doctors and business people. Consulted with the UN Secretary General and helped his clinical clients manage depression, obsessive compulsive disorder and anxiety. His book, Maps of Meaning, revolutionized the psychology of religion, and while a professor at Harvard University, he was nominated for the prestigious Levinson Teaching Prize.
The what?
Levinson Teaching Prize.
Oh, I was more worried about the word prestigious.
The
seemed to have
LTP.
More than the requisite number of syllables.
But prestigious?
Yeah, I want you to go back and listen to the
Is it prestigious?
Yeah, no, it was...
Prestigious?
Go on.
That's all.
Prestigious.
Prestigious.
He's also done a lot of very fucking masculine, manly, man things.
What?
Oh, like flown aerobatic planes.
Has he?
Yes.
Aerobatic planes?
Aerobatic planes.
As opposed to arid landscapes.
Yeah, no. He's done like loops loop-de-loops. In fighter jets and...
Why is that manly, masculine things?
Oh, come on, dude. You've seen Top Gun.
Yeah, well, that's homoerotic things. Well,
Kelly LeBrock, was she in that? Who was the blonde girl?
Kelly LeBrock. Kelly
McGillis. Wow.
Yeah.
I was only half being funny.
You got the Scottish
prefix instead of the French one. Kelly LeBrock was in... Oh, wait.
Oh.
What?
Yeah, it was in that other homoerotic 80s film. That's why God made... It's not why God made these movies.
Weird Science. Fucking great.
Well.
Great.
Highly enjoyable.
Oh, it's one of those.
Yeah.
It's in our list.
Yeah.
We need to make a list. If we had enough subscribers, someone else would make a list for us.
They might.
They won't.
We got to sign people last week.
Oh, shit.
We signed a dude.
Yeah, we each signed our own dude.
Yeah.
I own one, you own... No, I signed both of them.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
All right, so we got shared custody. Yeah, some dude came up to us at the end of a gig and said, will you sign my arm? And I went...
And Dom said, and he said, arm. And I said, Dom said...
I actually said, right, yeah, man, no worries, I don't do breasts.
Did you?
Yep.
He laughed. Told mine the next time I see him, if it wasn't tattooed, I'd fucking smack him in the head.
Oh, wow. That's supportive.
Didn't, as if I did.
Oh, right. Can't tell sometimes. You're very convincing.
Of course I am.
Yeah.
Acting! Thank you!
It's because of your place in the social hierarchy.
Yep, I'm a 14.
Ooh.
That's a 1 to 10 scale. What do you think about that?
Nice.
Yeah, how's that?
Yeah.
Have you ever signed anyone's stuff before?
I don't remember.
You were in G-Force when Megan got a G-Force tattoo.
Who got a G-Force tattoo?
A girl named Megan.
Oh.
Not Markle. You know how people
do... I almost guffawed about the G-Force.
You know how tattoo. People do portmanteaus of famous, like J-Lo?
Yeah.
Not J-Lo. What do they call those two together?
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
Oh, shit. What's wrong with me?
Bennifer. Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make Meghan Markle and Prince Harry Farkle?
Hello. Egan Farkle.
Egan Farkle.
That's funny. I like it.
Yeah, so...
So what are we talking about today? Oscar B. Peterson.
Ours would be Mom.
Dad.
Huh? Oh, yeah, Dad.
Yeah.
Mom, Dad, motherfucker.
Yeah, right. Okay. I'm sorry, I'm laughing quietly.
You are.
Yeah. My body was jiggling.
In the 50s, if I grew up in America... and I was African-American, I'd throw something on the ground and then I'd say, hey, Mom, Dad.
Oh, wow.
Because the mum would have to come in and clean it up after me.
In the 50s?
Because that would be...
Oh, leave it to Bradshaw. Breaver?
Breaver. Yeah. Leave it to Breaver.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all right. That's good. We are talking about...
So, the 12 rules... For life. I wasn't sure if it was for of.
Ah.
Yeah. So, the reason why we're talking about this is because quite a number of people...
Because Dom wanted to.
Yes, pretty much. A number of people had said to me, really like it when you guys have a topic. As opposed to us just going, what'd you do this week,
and
Matt?
And do you know how I feel about that? It's like when my hair's blonde... for a period of time, and then I dye it back to my natural colour, and everyone says, really like you with dark hair. That's what that feels like to me. That feels like the converse unspoken thing is not so like keen on it when you guys just waffle on about bullshit.
Right.
Mm.
Well, I...
And to those people... You can get fucked. Hello? What happened?
I agree with them. Those people. And the reason why I agree with them is because the few times that we have had a topic, then we've done some prep and we've been able to focus. And I felt like at the end of the conversation, I can remember what we've spoken about a lot better because we've kind of had a topic, done a bit of research, focused on it, and then talked about it. And then other times when we get together and just waffle on, I know we've done something and we had a nice chat, and sometimes a deep and quite interesting and challenging chat, but it's still been on the fly, off the cuff, which I enjoy.
On the fly and off the cuff? Yes. It's like my private life.
Sounds like my private stuff. So, the reason why I thought this would be good is because, well, I'm a bit of a fuck up, so I like the idea of a self-help book. I have a whole shelf of them, many of which I've read.
How many of your self-help books have you read?
Most. I've read most of them all the way through. There might be a handful that I abandoned or skimmed.
Okay.
And maybe a couple that I listened to and then got the book and referenced a few things from listening. But there are a couple where I just kind of gone, no, I just can't.
Yeah.
I don't agree. This is, or this doesn't really apply to me. Or
sure.
How
do you go about finding them?
A lot of the books I go about finding come from Facebook feeds and YouTube. So, for example, I see a podcast or someone will be a guest on something.
Yeah.
Which is why this has come up, because he was on Russell Brand's podcast recently. And I thought it interesting that they both got books about 12, which, like, really piqued my interest about 12 as well, because then you think about, you know, this is 12 apostles, we've got 12 months in the year, like, you know, the idea of a dozen is really important, you know, the zodiac signs, like, oh, like 12 is a thing for us, like, it's in our it's so embedded in our daily and yearly lives and rituals, 12 hours 2 o'clock, like, that when you see something like 12 rules, you're like, oh, better than 13. So okay. It just appealed to me. All right, that besides the point. I really liked what the conversation he had with Russell Brand about just stuff that they talked about. And so I got the book, started having a look at it, and thought, this could be something that we could talk about, because we could kind of have one... You know, if we get into it, we can talk about one rule at a time, and it could give us some focus.
Yep.
And also a progression through something.
How far through the book are you?
Chapter 5.
Yeah, right. Are you enjoying it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. I'm getting a lot out of it. I find it very interesting. The subject matter is very interesting, and
What is the subject matter?
What is the subject? So it's...
I guess, what if you just hold the cover? It's 12 rules for life. You fucking idiot, Matt. Oh, right, okay.
In a sense of what does each chapter cover?
No, I was giving an overview before we kind of started talking about it for the
overview
listeners and viewers.
Overview is pretty much... Now, I've gotten into it... to a point where I have a bit of an idea. But, yes.
The book itself stemmed from him writing answers on a website called Quora, where people
ask can questions. Go on,
post their question and just wait for people to answer. And answers, as they're read, naturally are either upvoted or downvoted as being worthwhile or not so much. And so if you were to go on today and read the answer to a brand new question, you would see one or two people's opinions. And if you go back in 2 weeks' time, you might see 20 people's opinions. And then the opinion that you would see first is the one that has been upvoted to being the most relevant, most useful answer to that question.
Yeah.
So he, presumably in his downtime between lectures, he was writing answers to these, to random questions. He would find something of interest and write an answer to a question. And then as part of that, he ended up writing, and it was it 60-ish rules for life.
Yeah.
And has, over the process of some period of time and talking to a publisher and blah, dot, 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 has got to write this book, 12 Rules for Life. So he's condensed it down to the basic 12 tenets by which one can live in order to have a better, happier, more fulfilling existence.
Well, an antidote to chaos. That's what it's called. Like, it's called 12 Rules for Life, an antidote to chaos.
I've got something to talk about that.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah. Now?
No. I'm going to come back to it.
Do we want to suggest why he's come to prominence? Because he's kind of... He's a clinical psychologist that ended up being a university lecturer, wrote a book 20-odd years ago that people found quite influential, but he was still really unknown, you know, to the public, really, certainly internationally, until 2 years ago.
Yeah, so the thing I spoke about with Dom before we started this, and it was in relation as well to the, if anyone listened to the last podcast, where I spoke about a friend of mine who had messaged me about previous episodes and the Kevin Spacey thing, if you were listening last time. She also referenced this guy. She is Canadian by birth, and I met her when she lived in Australia for a long time. We went to school together, and she now lives back in Canada.
I always want to say Canada.
Yes. She wanted to know, because we had referenced him in episode 37.
Yep.
That we were going to be talking about it in more depth. And she wrote to me to say, are you aware of his other...
His controversies.
Controversies. His other infamy, I suppose. And so initially when Dom spoke with me about this, I thought that we might be able to kind of discuss this book in a bubble of its own kind of little microcosm. But when Mary wrote to me and asked me that, I kind of thought, well, actually, no, maybe it needs to be referenced. So he, as a thinker, he freely discounts the idea of gender fluidity, cultural appropriation, white privilege. He's very open about these things.
Yeah.
And that makes him an incredibly divisive figure in 2018. So it's I think it's worth talking about him and his frame of reference before we talk about the book.
Sure. Yep.
Because he came to new prominence a couple of years ago when he was on campus at a college in Toronto. Yeah?
Yep.
Where he made very clear his
Okay, so
go on.
So from my understanding of it, there was a law that was trying to be passed, which has since been passed, which was making mandatory the use of gender pronouns that were were, for all intents and purposes, made up by people who decided that's what their pronoun clearly, was.
Not just he and she, but...
But other things?
Every other.
And he publicly objected to the law, saying, I'm not going to be told by the law what I can say, what I have to say. So different to, like, you're not allowed to say these things because people find these things offensive. Yeah. But people saying, this is what I want to be called. This is how I want people to refer to me. And the law saying, so if someone says they want to be referred to like this, you have to say it, but compelled by law.
And am I right in thinking that he, if someone was to walk up to him and say, I want you to refer to me by these pronouns, that he would be accepting of that, but he's just not accepting of the law that dictates that he must
that's
do pretty, that?
That's where there's some conjecture as to what he said. His, from what I've seen, and I haven't seen a lot, but what I understand is he said, I object to the law compelling me to say something, right? I don't object to there being a variety of pronouns, but when the law says...
That was my understanding of it as well.
And
absolutely.
So there is footage that I've seen with someone saying, so why, it's my pronoun, I've decided that I want it to be, you know, there's not been anything that said, I don't think there's anything where someone said, I want you to call me this, and he said no.
No.
Right, and the point, he was trying to say, when speech evolves to the point where something becomes part of the common vernacular, then I've got no issue with using it. But what's your motivation for telling me that I have to do this?
And I still won't say irregardless, though.
Even though it's a word now.
Shouldn't be. And?
It's irrepressible.
Aye, there's the rub. The nature of monkey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that irregardless is present.
Having said that, though, and we'll get into it when we discuss even the, not the first chapter, but we will certainly get into the idea that he is very black and white about male, female. And I have a fundamental issue with some of the ways he uses his definition of men and women to inform his opinions. The idea that order is masculine and chaos is feminine. And that's his yin and yang of stuff.
Yeah.
That fundamentally sets me at odds with him.
Okay.
So his lack of wanting to acknowledge gender fluidity, he point blank refuses to accept that there's a scale of masculine and feminine.
No, it's not what I understand. He's like, no, there's male and female. There's male sex and female sex. Now, where you feel you lie on that is, you know, you can have your idea of that, but you're still either male or female. Because masculine and feminine are not male and female. They are different things.
Correct.
Sex and gender are not the same.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where he...
I need to go back and find the reference that made me say that.
That's where, obviously, you know, there's... You know, you might have seen something and I might have seen something. We're not seeing the same thing.
Yeah, sure.
So we can have an idea. But, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that those things they're different. They are different.
Mm.
So, and where you fall on the scale of what you think, what you identify with, and whether... Now, that's... an identification as well. It's a personal identification. It's still not fact-based.
Yeah.
Is it?
No, that's right.
Like you know, there shouldn't be anything wrong with you saying this is where I fall on that scale.
Mm.
But whether that means that you are male or female, you're like, you still can't deny your physiology.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can say I'm a woman in a man's body, or like I'm...
Very well disguised.
And you can feel that and believe that to be true and act that way, because that can be a very real, like, that's experience that you have, and the way you see yourself, but it's still a man's, still a, a male body, not necessarily masculine, but male, sexually. Anyway.
Big nuts.
Sexually. I don't say that word very often.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's weird when you do.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, no, don't be sorry. I like it.
So where are we at with this now? About where, what do we need to cover?
I don't know, I just, I just wanted to say some words out loud.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
When it comes to the order and chaos thing, interesting thing about this book, and the further I get into it, the more, I don't know, I haven't read his first book, and I haven't, you know, obviously done any of his lectures or anything like that, but I, particularly in chapter two, when he talks about order and chaos, which I find the second chapter is really interesting. He seems to use the Bible as a way of suggesting that the Bible explains human nature and how humans interact and where we've come from. It's not like, oh, Adam actually, you know, took the apple that Eve gave him as a there's no, like, his interpretation of the meaning of what it says about human nature is really fascinating. And I will be interested when you get to chapter two, how you should, like, the order and chaos thing, like the idea, he says in, we shouldn't really get into it until we get into it, but the idea that from all life, like, is born from the woman, from nothing. So, like, the idea of from chaos, order is born, like, life comes. So there's nothing which is chaos. Well, like, every single possibility comes a specific thing. So it's, and the idea of the forbidden fruit, like, that, it's, anyway, I'll get it in chapter two. It's all really brilliant. It's really brilliant.
All right.
And also metaphoric, like, because it's a story. But anyway, what, should we do chapter one?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
How shall we start?
Give the title. So it's Stand Up Straight.
Stand Up Straight with your shoulders back.
Yeah.
Did you make some notes?
I did make some notes.
Me too. Look at us making notes.
I haven't yet had to refer to them, but... So... I will say, and I think I said it to you in private... That I... So far, my experience of the book, and I, so Dom's got the book. I'm listening to the author read his book. I much prefer, so far, watching and listening to his lectures than I do reading the book. That doesn't mean you should discount the book. But I certainly find a lot of times, and I haven't read a whole lot of self-help books because I'm clearly incredibly well-adjusted and I don't need any of those things to help me on my journey. Why are you laughing?
Well, just...
Where's everyone gone? What's happened? I find his lectures fascinating. And my first introduction was the 50-minute doco that you sent me.
Yep.
Which I found far more compelling necessarily than listening to him read his book, because there's an element, I think, of, I think the storytelling aspect gets in the way for me with so many of these sorts of books, the storytelling aspect to try and make it, I don't know, engaging and relatable gets in the way of just give me the fucking facts. Like, I love novels. I'm a bear for novels. But if I'm going to read a non-fiction book, I just...
You don't want the
just
anecdotes.
Want some facts. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Just tell me some stuff, man. So, chapter one starts out with him talking about lobsters. That sounds like I'm already denigrating what he's saying.
You did say lobsters, like... Rowan Atkinson would say lobsters just then.
Lobsters.
Lobsters.
Yeah, no, that wasn't my intention. But the reason for his analogy is that lobsters have been on the crayfish, have been on the planet for 350 million years and are informed by their hierarchical dominance situation. Mm-hmm. So they display and have displayed for 350 million years many of the same traits that humans do now in our relatively short history in comparison.
Particularly physically and...
Yeah.
Brain composition.
Yeah.
And the role of serotonin. Yeah.
The role of serotonin. Mm-hmm. You know one of those.
Yeah, she's a great singer.
Yeah, she is. Yeah,
got two cats. Yeah, never been outside.
Yeah. She's got a ragdoll named Baggins and another one whose name we can't remember because we've never met him.
I think I have. I'm just crap.
Dude!
I don't remember cats.
Don't remember cats. Cats is best. Dogs is peripheral at best.
Yeah, well, you know.
Except yours.
The best kind of cat's a dog. Yes. Neurochemistry. Brain makeup.
You are.
There we go. I wrote that word down.
Well done.
Yeah. So his argument there effectively is his proposition is that society is not a construct. It is the formation of societies is embedded into our physiology. Mm. And understanding your position in a society is something that's been around for hundreds of millions of years.
And he never once says DNA, which so many people would fall back on at that point. Mm. It's embedded in our DNA.
Mm. Yeah.
Is it?
No, because he's saying it's the neurochemistry of the species, not the individual.
Yeah,
yeah. Cool. There's something he brings up in it, which is along the way, which is the principle of unequal distribution.
Yeah.
So the idea that, the lobsters fight, and then the winner therefore has a much greater chance of continuing to win, and the loser, when it has another challenge, has a much greater chance of continuing to lose.
To lose, yeah.
And he makes that comparison. He says, and this happens in every thing. It's like a natural phenomena where, I like his analogy saying, most of the recorded music is made by almost... like a tiny amount of...
Isn't that magnificent?
...of the musicians. And even the Oscars, you think, like, most of the actors in the world, like, don't make Hollywood movies.
Yeah. So his analogy about the music was that to relative lay people, and certainly as far as classical music goes, I absolutely think of myself as a lay person.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about the Chris Browns. We're talking about...
Oh, no, he's talking about that too. Like, they're separate.
Yeah, but as far as this goes, we're talking about Bach, Mozart, Beethoven. We're talking about...
The top four, the big four.
The people who we know about. And then, of that tiny group that is a subsection of a much larger group of classical musicians, then, of those four, we only hear a tiny, tiny percentage
of the
music that they produced. So we only get the most infinitesimal part of what's actually on offer.
Yeah, and it also goes to explain how how money gets distributed, and how the richest 1% of 1% have as much as the lowest 3 billion people. Just saying that's just how things work. It gets distributed that way. It's the natural order of society. Even in the lobster world, the winner gets all the girls. It gets the best territory and the best food and everything like that.
Because
of the hierarchical structure of everything.
Mm.
Things like, the things that sit at the top of the structure kind of magnetically attract everything.
The best stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
So remember, the first rule, the first chapter is stand up straight with your shoulders back.
Yes. So lobsters who win got lots of serotonin, right? The one thing, the note that I made, so it's like serotonin, high levels of cocky lobsters, as he says in the book. Low levels of serotonin create scrunched up lobsters. To which I thought, ah, is that why we have so much depression in our society these days? Because people are hunched over a desk all day. And then when they go home, they sit on their phone and they do
you're
this.
You're doing like a lobster and egg analogy.
Well, I'm doing like, so if...
No, you're one's feeding into the other.
Yeah.
Not the other way around. That's
well,
what
I'm,
you're...
Well, I'm kind of suggesting if, like if we, by the, just our circumstance...
Yeah.
Like enact a posture.
Are forced into that position.
Then
absolutely.
We know that people who are depressed have low levels of serotonin. So that's with him saying, act, you know, stand up and put your shoulders back means that you're not crunched over your phone.
So it's as
so look at your phone like this.
So many people do.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they've got high self-esteem.
Do you know what? I never do a selfie. I don't do that with my phone.
Okay,
do you know, I see people out all the time at gigs who are like that. They look pretty high up on their in their hierarchy. They look pretty like they're having a good time.
We can come back to that.
All right.
Hold that thought.
Yep.
It's not a deep thought, but okay. We're going to come back to
it. We'll hold the non-deep thought.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So... serotonin is a chemical that happens naturally in the body, and you can supplement it, but it happens naturally in the body that dictates our mood, our digestion, our levels of anxiety. So consequently, if you have low levels of serotonin, you are more likely to have a shorter lifespan, more illness, anxiety, depression, less ability to deal with
stress.
Difficult situations and stress. Yeah, absolutely. And more more likely to have higher levels of stress. Can we dispense with the lobsters and make it more about people? Or have you got more to say about lobsters?
Sure.
I might come back to lobsters by accident without meaning to. He equates levels of serotonin in the body with a social status. If you have low levels of serotonin naturally occurring within you, then you fall into a lower social status. So
Perceive yourself. Yeah. And the world will therefore categorize you.
Correct.
Based on how you present yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... I feel like I'm jumping ahead by saying this, but I just want to say
sure.
It. The stand up straight with your shoulders back, it's part of a fake it till you make it mentality.
Ooh, is it?
Oh, absolutely. Clinically proven that if
is
you...
Is it a fake it or is it just actually creates it?
No. Well, if you're feeling sad, it's happened to me a lot of times at gigs.
Yeah.
You put your gig face on.
Yeah.
Like, stuff is shit at home, mm-hmm. but you put your gig face on, you get out there, you smile. I put my gig face on, I smile, and I feel better by the end of the gig. And I mean, there's a lot of other things that go on there because I'm doing the gig and I'm doing what I love doing, and God, I hope, you know, it sounds good and all that sort of stuff. And I get to the end of the gig and I'm better. But that's totally a part of fake it till you make it. It's been clinically proven that if you smile, if you engage those muscles to look like you're having a good time, you have a better time.
Yes.
Now, and the converse
is
true.
That's where I just asked the question about, is that faking it? Because really, it's not faking it if you're doing it. Because it is
when you're feeling like shit and all you're doing to try to present yourself to the world is just put on a happy face.
Yeah, it still doesn't equate to me as faking it. Like, but in this...
Really?
My the way I'm processing that is if you stand up and put your shoulders back, that's a real thing that you're doing and it has a real response. So it's not fake. It's a
show.
But it's all anything is. Like, so that's... But it's like it has a... Because it, like, it creates a response. It's not fake. It's real. So I get the phrase.
Not real within yourself when you're doing it. It's like, oh, fuck, I feel... I don't actually want to leave the house, but I've got to go and do this thing.
Yeah, but that...
Okay.
You're right. Yeah,
but so...
That's right.
And then people react to that,
but if you didn't
and then
leave,
it becomes real.
True. But if you didn't, you're like, I don't want to leave the house. I'm feeling shit. Right? Then you have to do something to leave. So that's not fake. That's real. It has a real effect. Now, I get... At some point, you have to go, I'm now... And then you're on. Because I do it all the time at gigs. Because I'm, you know, I'm here in my idea of my social order and status, and I put a guitar on and I'm there. Like, it's not...
Yeah,
like,
okay.
It's not fake. Now, I understand the phrase, and I think the phrase works, but this is where I kind of go, that I might be persnickety with language on it, because, yes, I think I get the concept, but the point of the put your shoulders back is it works. It's not fake. It has an effect. It's real.
Okay. Feels like semantics, but yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
And
sure, I got you.
And I do agree with that, but I think it's also important to work out whether you think it's semantics or whether you think, it's that specificity actually matters in this subject. And often I do get caught on that line of, man, just move on from the words thing and just follow my point. And sometimes I go, no, I think I need to clarify that there is a difference between that point and that point. And it might be that much. But because I feel like I'm pretty sensitive to stuff, and that's why I have a lot of self-help books, I feel like that's the point that gets me out of the house.
Yeah.
And everything, basically, you know, there's always some very minute tipping point. And sometimes for me that's really important. Otherwise I can't put my shoulders back. But yes, so not to be
too... So, like slippery. I said, I feel like I jumped ahead by just sort of leaping into that, which... So, he talks about serotonin levels and how when you have low serotonin, you have more susceptibility to illness. You also have far less ability to be able to cope with the outside world. When you have low serotonin, you live constantly in a heightened sense of fight or flight, that concept, where you are always aware of what threat might be coming next.
Yeah.
Which in general...
Or even preempting threats.
Yeah.
Because it also can cast you into the role of susceptible to being a victim, because someone sees you as someone that doesn't take much to challenge and lord over.
So he sets up the hypothesis that if you have the ability to...
Fake it till you make it.
That's what I'm trying to do now. To adequately show aggression, you're less likely to ever have to.
Yeah.
If you... And the same thing, if you are a person who naturally shies away from confrontation...
More things become a confrontation for
more
you.
More things become confrontational and you just regress more and more. So then he talks about the positive feedback loop. Feedback loop. So positive in the sense that it feeds on itself as distinct from positive in the sense that it's a good thing.
And around about that time he says, as a, you know, in his clinical practice, when someone comes to him with depression, he asks about sleep and diet. Because you can't treat...
Fucking how much did this resonate with you and I?
Oh, absolutely,
ridiculous.
Yeah. You can't treat a depressed person easily if they have poor sleep and poor diet and unpredictable routines. And that like alarm bell went off for me, not just with my life and yours, but the just that constant flow of articles that you would see about mental health problems in the arts. You know,
sure.
Roadies that, you know, have, you know, to take their own lives. Mm. You know, people who are up for 24 hours at a time,
yeah,
exerting themselves physically, but you know, they just can't. Their circadian rhythm is so interrupted that they just can't get on a pattern.
So he posits that, regardless of what time you go to sleep, you should wake up at the same time.
Yeah.
And force your body into that routine. And then on top of that, when you wake up, as soon as humanly possible after you wake up, have a high fat, high protein breakfast.
Yeah.
No sugars. What's the point? What's the fucking point? I wake up and have a coffee with two sugars in it.
Do you still have sugar in your coffee?
Yes! I still have sugar in my coffee. Stop judging me. Don't look at the levels on the thing. I'm loud. And I'm allowed to be loud.
Okay.
I just went straight back to J-Lo.
Oh, I did see you.
I know we're talking about Angelina Jolie, but I said J-Lo by accident when I was talking about Tomb Raider.
I saw your...
Yeah, you did.
Serotonin pig.
Yeah, you did. You saw my little spindly doodads. That's snails I'm thinking of.
Antennas? Yeah.
Are they antennas or are they eyes?
On lobsters?
Snails?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know my slimy creatures particularly well. Yeah, positive feedback.
How dare you try to get us back on track?
Positive feedback loop. So an alcoholic's hangover can be cured by drinking, which creates a positive feedback loop. So when the medication causes the disease, that's a positive feedback loop.
Yeah.
That is me with sugar.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, I know you made a joke about, not make a joke, but you made an observation of how good is it to wake up and have a coffee with two sugars in it. I mean, for me...
Of course, mate. I get that totally about...
I don't eat cereal because I eat the whole box. Like, I can't stop. I can't physically stop until there's nothing left for me to have.
So we had this conversation off camera.
Yeah.
About you and potato chips.
And me and drinking. Like, you know, I don't just want a beer. No, I want beer all the time. I deliberately
said potato chips.
But... Well, like, we both... I definitely did say potato chips and I definitely said Maltesers and I definitely said alcohol.
Yeah, you did. You
know, yeah. So wait, this stuff resonates with me because I go, yeah, I do that. And we often have the conversation about we're human and we forget that we're animals, and animals are just big series of chemical reactions that respond to stuff, not necessarily good for us.
Yeah.
So
the low serotonin thing also manifests in all those same ways as far as once you pop, you can't stop.
That's what it does.
It does, yep. But it also makes you susceptible to, the worst things you could possibly imagine that are the short-term gain in your brain. The short-term, I want to say dopamine, like those things that just spike.
Yeah.
So... drugs and alcohol and all those things that the next day when you're in the midst of a fucking
hell, come down,
I feel horrible. Yeah. And the only way you can fix it is to have another one.
Yeah.
That's...
Liz says to me often if we have a catch up, my ex-girlfriend says she has a Dom hangover. So like we caught up and then it's like 2 days later and she's like, she misses the time that we had. She's like, that's a hangover to her. So like in her conversation about it would be like, I either solve that with not seeing you again for a while and going cold turkey, or I see you again. Like, and there's that.
How's that make you feel?
Oh, it's exactly how I feel about almost any close friendship I have. Like when you hang out with your mate and then you go home and you go, I want to... Oh, it's how does that make me feel? Like I can...
Her saying that, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, I can completely relate to that. I mean, feel the same way. Yeah.
Huh.
And I
often... Well, that's good.
I often respond with, as we've said, you know, in our first couple of podcasts, I said, yeah, I saw my ex and like had a food binge because I felt shit. And I was saying last night, I had a really rough hour, and my inclination was to try and do something to. So my programming was have a drink, and then I went to do it, and I went no, don't. So I actually went outside with my dog and I ran, which I almost never do, and that worked. Well, it worked as well as it.
I run all the time because there's demons chasing me. I don't mean metaphorical ones, I mean actual ones.
Oh, right. You do live near Casey Field.
Brackets, I don't run. I haven't referred to my notes.
Oh, go.
But let me, just because I just...
Maybe I could read... Maybe we could finish off eventually when we get...
Oh, I know. No, that's good. Yeah. Yeah, go on.
No, go. You go.
Really?
I was just going to read a paragraph or two to finish.
I've got something for the next chapter because it came to me reading the first chapter, but I'm going to leave that because...
Hey, what?
Huh?
Is it for the next chapter or in the next chapter?
It is, but it came to me through reading the first chapter.
But is it about the second chapter?
It's about the second chapter.
That's pretty cool. Did you preempt?
I preempted because I know the title of the book and the title of the next chapter.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yep. Look at you, lobstering.
I'm gonna preempt the next episode.
Okay.
By saying that the idea that a professor, a philosopher, a psychologist would ever use the word chaos in the title of a book, with the reading I've done, I studied philosophy at high school. Not high school.
High school.
I studied philosophy at the brewery around the corner. I studied philosophy.
Well, arguably anything you ever study is a philosophy.
In university before I dropped out. So what do you think about that? Chaos is a very... it's a low-level word. In the scheme of... human evolution, I don't mean the millions of years of human evolution, I mean in our individual evolution, chaos is a very low-level word to describe the way we feel about our place in the system.
Okay.
So I was really surprised when I read that in the title of his book. So if you read a philosopher like Ken Wilber, you should look him up. He's amazing. He says that the nature of... I should just read the quote, shouldn't I? I've probably got it written down in here. But the idea that our dissatisfaction with life and our inherent unhappiness with our position is not symptomatic of... the conditions we're in, but actually a symptom of growth and understanding. I'm going to read you the quote.
Okay.
I'm sure I've got it here. There you go. Unhappiness and dissatisfaction with life are not signs of mental disorder, but of growing intelligence. And that's the definition of chaos, is as far as the human condition goes. A dissatisfaction with life and an unhappiness with where we sit in the scheme of things in our day-to-day life.
Yeah, true. But chaos is also a very literal thing.
You are.
I mean, chaos is also very real. Like, it's not just a human condition thing. It's a experience of the world. I mean, everything is order and chaos. I mean, beyond us is... unlimited potential of scenarios, which therefore is chaotic, some of which we're able to process and navigate through relatively predictably as real things.
So Peterson makes reference to I don't think he necessarily cites it, because his background is not his background. So he's very much a Jungian, as far as philosophy goes, and Freudian. And then
very Jungian, yeah.
And then combined with that, he has this theological thing where he's using the Bible stories to explain the human condition in relation to
I think
60s philosophy.
Maybe like what I was saying earlier, I think he's more specifically suggesting the Bible stories explain. So not using not using them to do that, but showing how they explain the human condition, and journey. So, so that's me being picky with language again, but it's enough of a difference to kind of go.
We said the same thing 2 episodes ago, and you're absolutely right. And he is all about the idea that people can change by virtue of their actions and therefore reactions, but actually by virtue of their actions.
Yes.
And that's the Jung coming up. That's because Jung believed that Carl believed that you could. Yeah.
Oh God. We've been serious for too long. Now I'm like, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Sorry, continue.
He's not the guy that delivers my Uber Eats. He's the guy, instead, that genuinely believed that humans were had the ability to change their entire existence. Because some people don't think that. Some people think that who they are, like they live their life like they had a developmental evolutionary stage that finished when they were, I don't know, arbitrarily 25.
Yeah,
this is who I am now. I don't learn anything else. I'm not. This is who I am.
But that's like that in itself as a decision is
totally thoroughly, a decision.
Thoroughly erroneous, because all you do is change.
Yeah,
I mean even. Physically, your cells replicate and replace. So on that sheer physical level, you know, once every cell in your body has replicated and the ones have died off and things.
It's every 7 years, like a dog.
Well, there you go. Every seven. So
it's not.
Whatever it is, once your body goes through that process, you're constantly changing. So this idea that, I think this, it's like, it's not even physically true. And then the thing is, what will happen is you'll get another piece of information, it'll embed itself somewhere, and you will have changed ever so slightly.
Mm.
And then all the time. So someone might say, I believe this. And they might mantra it, I believe this, I believe this, I believe this. Whilst, sure, that thing might stay the same, it still will change because it will be affected by everything else. But those kind of, that idea that I make the decision that, I'm this forever, it's not even true.
No.
Not even, you know, logically true.
It's not logically true.
I think some people live like that too. But people live like that, and that's the order and chaos thing. Like, that's the only way you can really make order out of what's going on is to have enough things that you believe to be consistent. Now they can change as much as things change, but as long as you have enough consistency, predictable consistency of like, well, you know, the sun's gonna go down and it's gonna come up every day. That's a belief that I have. I have faith in that, the fact that that's gonna happen. Then you can, well, even if that's the only thing you believe to be true, and then it's reinforced by the fact that it keeps happening, then other things can be malleable around it, and you can. You know, you can go through every day dealing with the rest of the chaos, because at least there's order in that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the way we actually live is there are far more things, particularly in a Western world, that we think are consistent, we believe them to be, and therefore, the fact that things are reinforced. So you can say about more things that I believe this to be true, I believe this, because we get reinforced by them often. And the other thing that's interesting about that, and we didn't really touch on it at my place 2 weeks ago, when I said about, you know, I have a library. Like, I have more information on this wall than my grandmother would have ever experienced in her entire life, believed to be possibly true. That's just in this room. Like, so yeah. As technology's changed, the idea that more things can be consistent because they keep being reinforced, like the consistency of a mobile phone, what a weird concept, air travel, these things that, like, wow, you never would have believed them to be true a generation or two ago, but now we believe them to be true because they're reinforced all the time. With that comes all these other possibilities, this possibilities of chaos, because we're aware, it's like everything is expanding to that point of, oh, there are more things to be true in my life now. It's informed. Therefore, there must be more possibilities of chaos that I'm unaware of.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I think as well, as far as... Should we wrap this chapter up?
It's fascinating.
Fucking hell.
It's fascinating.
And it ties back into the very start of what we talked about as far as rights and responsibilities.
Yep.
So he talks in his lectures a lot about rights and responsibility, in the sense that we are at a time in human history, in the Western world, where we have more rights at this point in human history than we ever have had.
Yep.
There's more open dialogue, there's more understanding, there's more, and you would hope that that would continue over every, I mean, and that's what's happened. It's like no matter what happens in the real estate market, it actually always goes up by 10% every year. So we get, by 10% every 10 years.
I think
doubles every 10 years. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, if it goes up by 10% every 10 years, then it doubles every 10 years.
Good for you. Okay, so anyway, I didn't know I was going to have to do math when I was here today. That's right, math.
Yeah. For our northern hemispheric friends.
Makes me laugh. Yeah.
Technically, that's true. When you do one sum, you do math. When you do multiple sums.
No,
you don't.
No? No, even one sum is mathematics.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yep, good. All right, thanks.
Jeez Louise.
Who knew that language and mathematics could be interwoven?
He talks about responsibility as far as how it relates to our development as a person. The more responsibility you take on as an individual, the richer your life is. And I loved that.
Mm.
Does he talk about that in this chapter? Or am I just talking about him in general?
Not yet.
Really? Not yet?
Not yet.
Ah, shit, I've jumped ahead without meaning to.
No, not in this chapter. So not yet in this chapter at all. Yeah.
Should I shut up then?
No.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Shoulder the burden. Lift the heaviest weight you can. Metaphorically. But also literally. Lift the heaviest weight you can. Because when you achieve that...
What is going to the gym if nothing but training yourself to be more responsible than you are
as
today?
As long as you recognise there's a mental aspect to that as well as the physical.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the point.
Yeah. But that, I mean...
We've got this buddy of ours who is massive. He doesn't really do it to be massive. I mean, he does a bit, but it's actually his...
It's his lobster.
It's his lobster.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He won't ever listen to this because he doesn't care about ideas. But I love that.
Did you see me shrink?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And it was in one of the YouTube videos I watched, and I think it was a lecture. I don't think it was an altercation with a college student, where he said, "Your rights So this girl was...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, your rights are my responsibility. That's fucking great.
Yeah.
That I just touched my mic. Sorry. Sorry, Dom.
That's... I love that.
That's right, but what...
And that's why I find him interesting, despite all the other things I find a bit about him.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be... Yeah, anything that kind of bristles up against how people feel, like when someone uses facts and logic against how someone feels... It's quite abrasive to hear, and particularly Absolutely. If you feel like it goes against something that you know, if you've been hurt or you can relate to the person that, you know, is expressing the, you know, the objection to the logic. But then when you follow the logical argument, it's back to what we were talking about with, you know, do we paint over a Rolf Harris
movie? Oh, well, I was going to say, back to the moral outrage thing.
Back to moral outrage. I mean, like, sure, don't like something, but it exists, and you need to embrace things. And when I say embrace, you not like go, oh, yeah, acknowledge that things exist.
The same as when you and I were in Berlin.
Mm.
And they tacitly acknowledge their history in Berlin.
The whole city is... it is a monument, what I found. The whole city seemed to be a monument to remind what we are capable of.
Yeah.
Which is something that is not a good thing, right? So not let's rebuild this city like nothing ever happened. Let's rebuild the city like this shit fucking happened, man.
Yeah.
And it wasn't people too dissimilar to us that did it.
So there are newly built... experiences, exhibits, monuments that clearly and explicitly explore what happened and make it very obvious that this is part of our shared experience.
Yep.
And it's here in the fervent desire that it never happens again. But the Brandenburg Gate's still there.
Yeah.
So those things seem to work in concert with one another. I'm coming back to the Confederate soldiers' statues.
Well, the solution to that is not to take the statue down; it's to put something else around it.
Yeah.
It's to build the other side.
100%.
It's to build. It's to extend the frame.
I agree.
To make the picture bigger.
God bless you. Mm. Well done.
You need to go widescreen.
That's a nice tie up. When I say tie up, let's fuck off.
All right. let me read you something to finish off.
I want you to.
Okay. Standing up straight with your shoulders back is not something that is only physical, because you're not only a body. You're a spirit, so to speak, a psyche as well. Standing up physically also implies and invokes and demands standing up metaphysically. Standing up means voluntarily accepting the burden of being, capital B, being. Your nervous system...
That a lot. Go on.
Your nervous system responds in an entirely different manner when you face the demands of life voluntarily. You respond to a challenge instead of bracing for a catastrophe. You see the gold, the dragon hordes, instead of shrinking in terror from the all-too-real fact of the dragon. You step forward and take your place in the dominance hierarchy and occupy your territory, manifesting your willingness to defend, expand, and transform it. That can all occur practically or symbolically, as a physical or as a conceptual restructuring. To stand up straight with your shoulders back is to accept the terrible responsibility of life with eyes wide open. It means deciding to voluntarily transform the chaos of potential into the realities of habitable order. It means adopting the burden of self-conscious vulnerability and accepting the end of unconscious paradise of childhood, where finitude and mortality are only dimly comprehended. It means willingly undertaking the sacrifices necessary to generate a productive and meaningful reality. Goodbye.
Say that 10 times quickly. That's my tattoo. That's what I was showing.
Ah. Hello, tattoo.
Hello.
Back next week with chapter 2, which is a really long chapter.
Oh, God, help me. How long did we just talk now? Too long.
Longish.
Too long.
Oh, well, what are you going to do?
Get a beer.
Let's go get you a beer.
No, he's not going to have one.
I want to eat some meat.
You're a dick. See you, mate.
Bye.
I'm attached to things.